For those of you that don't know me, my name is Shayna Morrison. I have been attending this church for about 8 years now. Before we begin, I would like to invite all of my recovering Christians from all denominations, yes, even you Catholics, I see you out there, just to take a deep breath in and let it out. I, like perhaps some of you, shut down and begin disassociating as soon as I hear the words Bible, Jesus. Well, you guys know the list. In fact, I grew up in the church right across the street. I grew up in a Baptist church where we thought this was the butterfly church. That's what my mom lovingly referred to it as, where people believed that you magically turned into butterflies when you died. And I thought, how wonderful, I want to attend that church. This homily I'm about to give comes from several ancient texts. The story as told in the Bible is one of these texts found in the book of Mark. Recently, I have decided that perhaps I could approach the Bible as I do other religious and spiritual texts. You know, those that pique your curiosity. Perhaps I could approach some of the Jesus stories like I approach stories about Ishtar, the Sumerian and Akkadian mother goddess, or the story of Irene, the Greek goddess of peace, for which my child is aptly named. I struggled. It was difficult. I sat with the struggle a little bit longer, and then I started to dig in. Where was this coming from? And I discovered this. Jesus was a man. And that man, in my Christian upbringing, had an association with other men who were given lots of power. In fact, a ton of power, and this power was often directed towards harming women. My divine feminine energy had zero interest in more stories about men. But weren't there stories of women in the Bible interacting with Jesus? I remembered Mary Magdalene. Wait a minute, didn't she wash a man's feet with her hair and her tears? Okay, there had to be something else. There had to be something maybe a little bit better that could resonate with me, you know, a starter first baby step story. So I turned to my aunt. My aunt, Lisa, some of you know her, is a seminary graduate from Princeton and the only family member I knew who had a picture on her wall of Jesus on the cross with heaving breasts. Talk about making an impression on your 10-year-old niece. If anyone could help with this conflicting, confounding problem, it was going to be her. Today, what I present to you is an abridged version of the story of Talitha, written in first person by my aunt, giving name and voice to women in Christianity. It is found in her newly published book, Until We See Faces, Lifting the Masks of Scriptural Women. And thank you to Peggy, who is not here, for giving me a floral face. My intentions for this homily are to inspire you to turn inward and connect to our main character, who actually in the Bible is not named, but her name comes from the words uttered by Jesus, Talitha Kumi, which means little girl. My ask is for us as a congregation to uphold the Unitarian Universalist principles of honoring all spiritual paths and religions, even finding ways to make peace with those that have hurt us most, so we can truly heal this world. With this, I give you Talitha. Because a woman needs healing, a child dies. When a woman is healed, a child resurrects. Which is the greater healing? Life from death or death from life? I am 12. It has been a very big year. Supposedly, I became a woman this year. So my mama and dad say, anyways, what's the big deal? My parents are pretty neat people. My dad is the smartest man in the Lake Cities around Galilee. He's brilliant, not because he is my dad, but because he is the head guy at the synagogue. My dad has studied the Torah, the books of the prophets, and the sayings. He has studied longer than he has even known Mama. Every Sabbath, I hear Dad reading from the scrolls. Sometimes, if my Mama and I sit close to the divider, I can peek between the slats and see the tassels near the hem of his robe. I always tell Mama that the tasseled shawl over his robe is way too long. The tillit always dusts the floor. I laugh whenever I see his tassels, the clinging little dust balls. And once I get the giggles during worship, I can hardly stop. I always ask Mama why the women and children are separated from the men and older boys during worship. I can't figure it out. Isn't God worshiped the same whether a divider was there or not? Dad is a pretty intelligent guy outside of the synagogue. I've heard some of the men at the town gate say, Jairus keeps the house in order. Yes, Jairus is my dad's first name. Sorry, Jairus. The men at the gate probably don't know that Mama is the one who keeps the house in order. The women at the market always tell Mama how blessed she is to be a well-kept woman. The women mean blessed with house servants, nice clothes, plenty of food, and a healthy daughter. Mama is probably the most brilliant thing Dad ever did. She is the one who handles the money, the market, the servants, the frequent house guests, my education, and even the occasional stitching of Dad's prayer shawl. Whereas Dad is usually in meetings at the town gate, teaching Torah to the older boys or doing rabbi things. But I don't think my dad is like the young rabbi Jesus we keep hearing about. He's been traveling in Galilee lately. Some say that Jesus turned water into wine at a wedding. Others say he touches people with awful diseases, heals them, and never gets sick. He supposedly casts out demons. I think he might be a little spirit-touched, if you know what I mean. I feel sorry for him. In the synagogue near his hometown of Nazareth, the men gave him one of the prophet's scrolls to read. He read very well, but then he slipped up by saying, "This has been fulfilled in your presence," implying he was some sort of Messiah. Can you imagine the reaction in that room? Because of this whole Messiah misunderstanding, a small band of women and men follow him. It's a somewhat questionable group of people, made up of sex workers, tax collectors, rough fishermen, you know the type. Maybe because they are so radical and he accepts them regardless of their lifestyle, this group follows him. Maybe they actually believe that he can perform some kind of miracles. I don't know. I wonder what these followers will do when the miracle worker's powers eventually run out. When the Romans catch up with him and see him as another threat to Caesar. I wish such zealots would stop and think about how proclaiming their cause makes life more difficult for the regular person. The Romans tolerate very little and make examples of anyone, especially Jews. Somehow, while asking about the difference between girls and boys over dinner, I found that Mama and Dad had shifted the subject to someone they had in mind for me. Why did I have to be promised to someone? Why couldn't I have someone myself in mind for me? 12 was too young to be thinking about kissing a boy. I didn't even know him. Maybe I wouldn't even like him, let alone having babies and living somewhere else without my Mama and Dad. Mama and Dad were engaged as young teenagers, more like Mama was assigned, promised to Dad. Yuck. Can you imagine knowing you had to spend the rest of your life with someone that you just met? Some guy you didn't even know? Luckily for Mama, Dad turned out to be a pretty neat guy. Falling asleep after dinner, I told myself 12 was turning into a big year. Menstruation, men, marriage, money, market, bedtime. Because a woman needs healing, a child dies. when a woman is healed, a child resurrects. Again, I ask you, which is the greater healing, life from death or death from life? I don't play anymore. I go to the market rarely. I don't even eat dinner with mama and dada anymore. I've gotten sick, really sick. I've had coughs, chills, you know, aches before, but this is different. Something's different. It's like the life inside me is draining away. When I first got sick, some townspeople talked about Jesus across the lake, and soon enough, he arrived at the upper end of the village. Especially important was the fact that my heavy breathing had started and I didn't know how much longer I could wait. Mama said Dad let go of her hand without a word, left my bedside, and bolted out the door. What father in his right mind leaves his child on her deathbed? Dad had never taken a direct verbal position on the young rabbi until I began gasping for air. I think Dad knew I was dying, and no matter what, he was willing to try anything. The townspeople still graphically tell the story. A great crowd gathered around Jesus beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus, my dad. Seeing Jesus, he fell to his feet and pleaded, saying, "My daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." So Jesus came. He started to go with my dad. Can you believe it? My dad, an older rabbi, kneeling as if worshiping before this young rabbi Jesus and asking him to come and heal me. He must have known this might cost him his job and his credibility. Rabbis do not consult miracle workers. They pray to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I guess if women leaders were in the synagogue, they would pray to the God of probably Sarah, Rachel, and Rebecca. Maybe with time, the community would forgive and forget my father's actions because of his love for me. As the townspeople's story unfolds, Jesus, his ragtag group of followers, and my dad were hurrying through the crowd when suddenly the young rabbi spun around and shouted, "Who touched my garments?" My dad said he got really, really confused. He was anxious to bring Jesus back to our house to heal me. I was the sick one. This was no time to play games. But then Dad heard one of Jesus' disciples say, "Jesus, you see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" Jesus, as if stone deaf, kept looking around to see who had done it, who had touched his garments. Then the crowd parted, and a woman came forward, trembling in fear. The crowd stepped aside further. She fell at Jesus' feet. She told him the whole truth. She had had a flow of blood for 12 years, had suffered much under many physicians, and had spent all that she had, but she was no better. In fact, she grew much worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus, came up behind him, and thought, "If I can only touch his garment, I will be healed." Immediately, the hemorrhaging ceased, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. At that moment, Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone forth from him, immediately turned to the crowd. Don't miss that part, you guys. Faith releasing power, a woman's faith, released power from Jesus. A silenced crowd, a trembling woman, a dusty pair of feet, panting breaths. Then Jesus spoke calmly, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace, be healed of your disease." Dad said he didn't hear the rest of the blessing as Mama's runners from the house interrupted his listening mid-sentence. The runners whispered into my father's ear, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further when your daughter is dead?" Papa still gets choked up every time he hears that first part. Within hearing range, someone in the crowd said, "Because that woman needed healing, a child has died." Several around the speaker shook their heads. Overhearing what was said, Jesus said to my dad, "Do not fear, only believe." The power of belief. My dad wept. Jesus allowed none of the crowd or his band of followers to come to the house except three fishermen, Peter, James, and John, and of course my dad. Unfortunately, by the time the five reached the house, the paid mourners had begun playing flutes and loudly wailing. Mama and some helpers had laid me on a bed atop a shroud. Jesus entered the house, and instead of addressing my mother, who had left my room to greet him, he immediately went to the mourners and said, "Why are you weeping and wailing? The child is not dead, but merely sleeping." Dad looked at Mama across the crowded room. Mama gazed back into my room. My lifeless body was bluish, and the mourners laughed. Jesus promptly put them outside. Upon closing the door, he tenderly gathered into the room near my bed my parents, the three fishermen, and taking me by the hand, he said, "Talita kumi," which from Aramaic translates to, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." The breeze through the window stopped moving the curtain. Tears seemed to dry in place. Breathing hesitated. No one moved. The hand held on. Dad and Mama say nothing in their memories can compare to the excitement of what happened next. Suddenly, there was the faintest press of a pulse, barely perceptible but regular. A spot of pink appeared on my cheek. Mama said it spread into a beautiful flush. My lips darkened. Dad says then my body quivered and I started breathing. My eyelids fluttered. And at last, I parted from death. First, I squinted, my eyes eventually adjusting to the light in the room. A hand held on. I looked directly at Jesus. His eyes were rivers of peace. It was as if I had known this man all of my life, and I was not afraid. Immediately, though, I rose up and walked over to Mama and Dad. They and the three men in the room were overcome with amazement. Papa swept me into his embrace. He and Mama clung to me and cried. Gee, I knew I'd been pretty sick, but I felt like, you know, they were acting like I had been dead or something. With my face pressed against Dad's chest, I saw the shroud that had been beneath me. I caught the eyes and smile of the young rabbi who had risen me up from my bed. Not too long after that day, Jesus went away. He said he was returning to his own country. Maybe being with us made him miss his own family. I overheard him and Dad talking in the garden just before the teacher left. Dad was hesitant, as if something was weighing heavily on his mind. Finally, he blurted out, "Why did you have to stop and find out who touched your garment? If we had just kept going, my daughter probably would not have died." Because a woman is healed, a child resurrects. Jesus looked off into the distance. Which is the greater healing? Life from death or death from life? That is what resurrection is, you know. Healing, rising, and walking. Breaking free of the cages that Maya Angelou talks about. Freedom on the other side. What are you waiting for? What needs to die so that you may truly live?